This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington talking with Jack Wall. And I know we have met or at least crossed paths at GDC, but it's really fun to finally have a chance to sit down and talk with you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Kate. This is great. Thank you so much.
The music that you wrote for Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War is just, it's incredible. I mean, it's just the tension that you got and that 80s vibe and everything. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, diving in and peeking under the hood for how you got that sound.
Awesome. Thanks so much for saying this. Very kind.
Well, it's an amazing score. And from what I understand, you had to create it in a pretty short span of time, shorter than maybe what you were planning. And so I'm wondering if, you know, over the years with your experience, if you've come up with ways to kind of really hit the ground running and get the music to sound the way you think it should in a short amount of time.
Right. Well, you know, my process is pretty standard for me. I mean, I do the same thing on almost any video game I work on at this point. And that is, I spend probably at least a month, sometimes longer, just kind of trying to understand what the game is going to be, what the vision is for the game, from the directors, the audio directors, the people who are creating the game. So I can, you know, kind of visualize in my head the kind of score I want to write to help them make that happen. This was a little different for Call of Duty because, as you may know, three studios make Call of Duty sort of in they tag team, and you know, I work with Treyarch. There's Sledgehammer Games and there's Infinity Ward and Treyarch, and I work with. I've done the last four Treyarch Call of Duties, and. You know, so it was supposed to be Sledgehammer's turn, and they had some, you know, just upheaval going on at the, you know, changes happen, things happen.
Yeah.
It's just life, you know, and they, I guess Activision decided that it would be best for, to have, you know, Treyarch take up the mantle and make it the next Black Ops 5 a year early. So, you know, we had done Black Ops 4 in 2018, and then 2 years later, here we are. Oh, we're doing a year early. Okay, that's cool. I was happy because it was sort of, especially after COVID hit in February or March or whatever it was like, oh, this is actually a really good time to be writing a major score for a video game. So, you know, I don't really think we really started working too much until February, I would say. And, you know, I take about, like I said, about a month to really dig into what the process is for making this game and what's about. I read the scripts. I delve into the characters and blah, blah, blah. I just get really as familiar as possible as I can with what they're trying to make. And then from there, I start to write a few themes, sketch out a few themes. And I think the first thing I wrote was 1981, which is, I think, the third one on the soundtrack. And then after that, you know, Belle's character started to take shape in the script and all that kind of stuff. So I think I hit that second. So, you know, 1981 was sort of just like a... I don't even think that theme gets used in the game per se, but I use it. I use the actual notes of 1981, like, all over the score. So it was kind of a sketch, like a... sort of just a way to get myself to have material to work with that could sort of link things together as the, you know, throughout the score.
Thank you.
that's how it started with that. And then once I have themes approved and all that, those two themes were done. And it was like, okay, now, you know, here's a level. We have a level ready and go. So, you know, then I start writing the levels. So I can get into that whole process too, if you want to
sure.
talk about that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The setting of the game in 1981, the resolution of the hostage crisis just had such a definite time. And as soon as I heard your cue, 1981, I was like, oh man, yeah, that's what it sounded like. But you know,
that's cool.
I wouldn't trust myself to just, you know, from my memory, record music that sounded like 1981. So I'm wondering, you know, what sort of reference music you listened to, or that kind of thing to kind of help guide the sound.
Well, you know, at first we weren't clear in February or March that this game, I didn't know what the name of the game was, right? All I knew was that it had to do with a Russian spy, and his name was Perseus. So Perseus was this Russian spy, and he was the antagonist, and you were trying to hunt him down and stop, you know, bad things from happening. So that's really all I knew. But we decided early on, yeah, it's taking place in the Cold War. We knew that. And why don't we do sort of like use synths from that era, but let's modernize the sound, you know? And of course, adds for drama, we'll add orchestra. And so, and I thought, okay, it would be cool if we did orchestra and choir, because if it's Cold War and he's Russian, let's put some Russian lyrics in and blah, blah, blah. That was really where my thought process went. And then when I wrote the Cold War theme, that was way down the line. That was like, I think it wasn't until June that I actually wrote that theme. And, you know, we recorded in June, so I didn't write it for the first set of sessions. And then we recorded again in September 1st, we recorded. And then we were sort of done mixing and delivery by the halfway through September. So it was really down to the wire when I started writing that theme and getting that done. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I love the addition of the chorus, because that Red Army chorus just really has a really distinctive sound. And so what chorus did you use for that?
Oh, yeah, that's such an interesting like story of our time right now, because, you know, as you may or may not know, being in a choir is a super spreader event.
Yeah.
So, you just can't have people singing on top of each other. So what I did was I called my trusty, choir maestra and contractor, Ayana Haviv, and I talked to her about it. And I said, I really want to hire a choir, but we're going to have to do this in a way that where everyone records themselves. Or initially, I think I was thinking I would like sort of buy a small rig and a laptop with a mic and a mic pre and send it around to everyone. But Ayana said, oh, no, then because then what you have to do is disinfect that thing.
Oh, sure.
That whole rig, because that's what they were doing at Treyarch with the VO talent. They would send out like a rig, and that's what their plan was. So I thought, oh, maybe we can do the same thing with the choir. But Ayana said, well, that's not really necessary, because I have 32 singers that all have the capability of recording at home, and they know how to do it, and they're good at it, and they do it for other projects already, you know, when they're doing solos and stuff like that. So I said, great, let's do that. And so she found, you know, for the initial session, we did 32 voice choir SATB. And then I was trying not to hire a choir for September, because it was really hard. I mean, talk about complicated. It wasn't just the COVID thing where everyone had to sing in their own room. It was the fact that we're using Russian lyrics. So there's this process of, because Russian is not one of the romantic languages. Like, you can't look at the words and understand how to pronounce them if you're not a Russian speaker. So, you know, Cyrillic is like its own, you know, own characters. So what we did was I hired, at Ayana's suggestion, I hired Nino Santacuzzi, who is with the LA Opera, and she translated all of the lyrics from English to Russian. So there was this process where I wrote the lyrics for the June sessions for Bell's theme, 1981, and some other things. I sent them to Nino. She translated them into Russian, Cyrillic. Then she transliterated them so English speakers could read them. Then she sent. Then she did a voice memo recording and sent that to Ayana, and where she didn't sing it, but she spoke slowly how to pronounce each syllable. Ayana then put, you know, we put those, she kind of rewrote the transliterations so that it was in a format that her singers would understand, and with a sort of a legend about how to pronounce things. And then I put those in the music, right? And then I had to rewrite some of it to make the words fit, or I had to go back to Nino and said, I really need to economize these words, there's too many words, you know, that kind of stuff. So we went through that whole process. I finally got it done, got it in the music, sent it to Ayana. She did a guide vocal then. And the guide vocal then had to be approved in terms of pronunciation with Nino. Once Nino approved that and I approved it, you know, I liked the way it was laid out in the music. And you know, because sometimes, you know, there'll be a syllable. I just don't like the sound of it. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to, instead of having that syllable be on the end of a phrase, I'll put it, I'll re-kind of jigger everything so it all sounds better to my ear. Not being a Russian speaker, but just so it just flows better. Hmm. Comes out more naturally kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once I'm done with that, then she sends the music to four guide vocalists. Actually, she was one when we did with SATB. She was a soprano guide vocal. And then she sent out to an alto, to a tenor, and to a bass. And then we got all those lined up. And once that was good, then the call went out to all the singers, and they had to follow those guide vocals and sing their, they did two tracks, one, and then I had an engineer write up a one sheet about how to record yourself for this.
Oh, sure, yeah.
How far away you are from the mic, the second pass, you want to turn the mic 45 degrees and sing off axis, that kind of stuff. And then we did a few tests of that to make sure it sounded okay. That was cool. And then, you know, we put the call out. And so all the singers would then do their bit, send it, and then we had a music editor who would collect it all once it was approved by Ayana. Oh, and that was a whole other process. Ayana had to give notes before I even heard them. Like, oh, this isn't quite right. Can you re-sing this? This doesn't sound right. There's noises, blah, blah, blah. So then all these 64 tracks were then sent to a music editor. Music editor would line them up in the music, clean all the tracks up so there's not a buildup of room noise, you know, technical stuff like that. And then, you know, finally gets mixed with the orchestra after that got recorded, and my own sort of pre-recorded synth tracks and whatnot, percussion. So this process was pretty intense, and it took over 2 weeks to get done before we even, you know, got to the mix.
I'm surprised you were able to do it that quickly, honestly.
Yeah, so. Well, we worked pretty diligently to get it done. Once that was done, and, you know, then they come to me and they say, let's do a theme song for the top of the game. You know, we have this 40-second looping, you know, visual, and can you write a 40-second piece of music that loops? And that turned out to be, okay. And I'm thinking the whole time, thinking for the second recording sessions, I'm not going to need to record or choir. I don't have to do that again. But then they came to me with this, and I was looking at this, you know, what they were going to give me, and I had to write to it. I was like, there's no way I have to hire a male choir. I have to. I got to do this all over again. And, you know, which in one sense, it's sort of like, oh, it's a daunting task. I have all this other music I have to write. And then but in the other sense, I was like, oh, this is exciting. This is going to sound really cool. So that became the first 40 seconds of Cold War. And then we got it looping perfectly, and it was in there, and everyone loved it. They thought it was really dark. It was very Black Ops, and it really captured the Cold War kind of aesthetic. And then, because at that point we knew it was called Cold War, and And so they came back and said, you know, we really, really love this. And can you just extend it, make it like over 3 minute piece, like a real theme. And I was like, oh yeah, I could do that. So that became what you hear today as Cold War.
The texts?
Well, for Bell's theme in 1981, I just wrote out myself. I wrote out lyrics in English, and just knowing Bell's character, and I wish I could talk about that, but they're not allowing me to release the lyrics to Bell's theme because there's too many spoilers in it until the second season is released, and it's been out for a little bit. So, but yeah, I wrote all those lyrics in English and then sent them to Nino. For Cold War and some other things that we ended up recording for just with Male Choir, I had Cindy Shapiro write the lyrics because that to me was like, I was looking at it and was like, okay, this one needs a little bit of thought and I don't have time and I'm not the best lyric writer. Let me get Cindy, who's my, you know, full disclosure, she's my wife. She's a brilliant lyricist, so and a great composer in her own right. But she does the research. She's so smart. She went into Rand Corporation and got declassified CIA documents and read them, and you know, kind of. We wanted to convey the point of view of a Russian person during the Cold War, looking at America, Because we only here in America, we only think about what our perception was. I grew up in that era, so I remember it. You know, it was, you know, these people are dangerous and it's a dangerous time and anything could happen and the Russians are, you know, whatever. But I wanted to sort of make it so that if a Russian person was playing this game and they heard these lyrics, they would be like, yes, they captured the, you know, the Cold War for us, you know, from our point of view. And I just thought that would be a cool thing to do. And nothing says Cold War like Russian male choir. So,
yeah, it's such a
Cindy wrote those lyrics. Yeah,
it's phenomenal. It's such a distinctive sound. And yeah, as soon as you hear it, it can't be anything but the Soviet Army chorus. And I don't know how they did it. I don't know if it was the harmony or the interplay of voices or what, but yeah, you really nailed it. So,
I thank you so much. That means a lot. Yeah, that was a labor of love right there. And we were able to publish those lyrics on my website, so they're on jackwall.net, and you'll be able to check them out. They're in Cyrillic and transliterated, and in Russian, so you can sing along if you want.
I might just do that next time.
Yeah, I should put the music up too. I should put the choir part up.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be fun.
And then, yeah, when choirs can get back together, you know, it can like be in their repertoire.
Yeah, but even like singers would love to just look at the music and, you know, read it, sing it.
Oh, I'm sure. One of the things I was curious about, because there are a lot of sounds that seem like they're authentically 80s with the synths that you used. And I was talking with, I think it was Tom Salta, who said these ancient, or, you know, period synthesizers, it's like trying to keep a little old Volvo alive because they're so cranky and temperamental.
I know. Yes.
So
And I'm a composer that has no time for that. So yeah. I use all the soft synth versions of those synths. So.
Yeah, I was curious about, you know, what sort of, you know, like sample libraries you used for those sounds.
You know, it's a combination of a bunch of things. It's a lot of the Arturia is a great French company that makes really great Moog synthesizer plugins based on CS80, the Moog modular. You know, when you hear Bell's theme, the way that begins, that's the Moog modular doing an eight note sequence.
Thank you.
And then the Mini Moog as well. I used the Yuhi plugins, Diva, and Zebra, HZ. And then it's probably some Omnisphere in there too. I do own a Moog Sub 37, so that's in there as well. There's some great sounds on that, and that's all analog stuff. But yeah, the combination of all that stuff to create those sounds is just, it was a real, you know, sandbox bunch of fun there.
Yeah, well, since time was so very tight, how much time did you have to kind of play around and experiment with, you know, getting those sounds just right?
Well, I love this period of time between, yes, you're the composer, and, you know, here's the sign on the dotted line, you're the composer, and when they deliver the first level for me to score, because that's my playtime. That's when I make sounds. I actually sometimes will call people that I really admire who are great musical instrument designers and have them create some stuff, and I want some stuff in this, you know, I just sort of mobilize my army, so to speak. I didn't do a lot of that, but I did work with a guy named Steve Taglioni, who he works a lot with Thomas Newman and other great composers, making great sounds for some of the levels that we were doing that weren't necessarily, like the prisoner level was this place that was just this psychotic mess. You know, you're in a dream state or a drug-induced haze, right? So I wanted to really do some interesting sounds for that level. So I had Steve design me some instruments that I could play myself, you know. So that was really fun.
Well, what were some of the instruments that this colleague created for you?
You know, I wanted to use Bell's theme. Do 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 do. That's his theme, and you play Bell, and so you're in this sort of this prisoner level, and you're Bell, and you know I don't want to give too much away, but I wanted to use that theme throughout that level and really screw it up and mess it up. So he was giving me like samples of like crazy saxophones and Tibetan horns and I'm trying to remember what they were. He just gave me a bunch of stuff and I used what I liked, and I would just play that theme, you know, using the, you know, different performances of that theme, playing with different instruments. And there was like every time you saw this one thing in the game, this theme would happen. I just wanted to evoke, you know, something about him,
yeah.
about Bell. So, you know, I just found ways of doing it with all those different types of instruments, which I thought was fun.
Yeah, well, and then it gives the soundtrack a sense that it can't be for any other game. I mean, it really has a unique signature. So.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I've been working on, it's my, like I said, my fourth Call of Duty. This is probably the most linear, succinct storyline in the four that I've done. So it was actually easier to do that, right? Because I was able to connect these themes throughout the game. You know, whenever Bell did something interesting, I would use his theme. Whenever, you know, there was many times throughout the on different levels where I would use the theme from 1981 to sort of be familiar but do it in a different way, so to connect the whole story together. And then the Cold War theme is used two other times and at the end as well, the very end of the game. Yeah.
Wow. Well, one of the things that I really enjoyed about the game is that you get to go to some really far-flung locations like Cuba and Vietnam and Tehran. And you did such a good job just kind of giving a hint, like a flavor of each of those locations without, you know, pulling on a lot of cliches and stuff. And so what I'm curious about is what your process is, because you still want it to be part of the game and you want the music to sound like it's part of that game and not, oh, here's a completely other thing. I mean, it still has to sound like the same game world. So how do you go about doing
exactly that? Well, the way that I did it in this particular instance was, I just said about Bell's theme, I would use certain elements when they made sense to use. Like at the very end of the game, I used just a male choir by itself for one of the endings, just so that would make sense, sort of. Going to Vietnam, I used an Asian instrument called an erhu, which is like it's a Chinese violin played by Karen Han that just evokes sort of an Asian flair, but I didn't overdo it. I just used that one instrument. It wasn't like everything sounded completely. No, I did use some percussion too. I did use some Asian percussion, but in the context of like cinematic drums that you might hear in, you know, throughout the rest of the score. So, you know, I might have some high end, you know, detuned cymbals playing too that just gave it sort of an Asian feeling. You know, I'm trying to think of other things that we did. I used Cameron Stone on cello on Bell on the inside when your character, you're playing a different character, and then suddenly halfway through the level you become Bell. You know, Bell takes over, and I used his theme there with the cello. Yeah, I just try to do things, as much as I can to just give a flavor of the location and the characters that are being portrayed and the story, you know, something about the story as well.
Yeah.
All those three things sort of come together for me.
Yeah, the fusion of those elements in the Tehran level, I think, are really neat, because there are some instruments that you just instantly know they're from that region, like the Middle East, or you know, the guitar for Cuba or whatever, and so you don't have to really go, you know, full on multicultural music with it. You just really need just a little hint of it.
That's right. Like Turkey was Trabzon Airfield. Like that starts off with a saz. You know, that's like the national instrument of Turkey. So I just put a little bit in. I didn't put a lot in, just a little bit at the top, and that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. circling back to how you organize the music for the levels, I mean, what are some of the things you think about preliminarily? I mean, obviously, you know what's going to happen in the level. So how do you go about organizing the music from what exploration to the first little skirmishes, and then if there's a boss battle at the end?
So, you know, usually it's my process is that I'll ask the audio director to do a very skilled playthrough of an entire level and do a video capture of that. So we'll do that, and then I'll have it, and then we'll do what's called a spotting session. I'll go through the level with the audio director and anybody else who wants to chime in and talk about what I see as being appropriate music for each area going through that entire level. My assistant is on the call, Jim Lordeman. He takes notes, and Brian and I, or Jeremiah, whoever the audio director was for that level, we'll just have a conversation going through it, and we'll play in sync, you know, on Zoom or something, or Slack, I think it was. You know, I'll just share my screen and I'll start playing the movie. And then I'll stop it when we get to the end of a section, and we'll talk about where music is going, how long it should be, how it should be implemented into the game, stuff like that. And then once we do that session, it usually takes an hour and a half to get through that session for each level. Jim will write up all the notes, put it in a Google Doc that's shared with the entire team. He will, and way in the beginning, Brian Tuohy, who's the audio director for Treyarch, he and I come up with a naming convention for every file, you know, all the technical stuff that if you do it up front, like, it makes your job easier all the way down the line. So just stuff that, you know, that's professionalizing what we do. And then Jim will put, you know, all these names into the Google Sheet and all the directions that we had discussed in that spotting session, so that, you know, all I have to do then is just go ahead and write it. You know, it's pretty easy.
Yeah,
at that
easy
point.
Part, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that would be the easy part, yeah. But
the mere matter of composition, right? As John Williams used to say.
What I appreciate about all of the levels that I've played through, I haven't finished the game yet, but is that the music isn't there as wallpaper. I mean, it's very strategically placed so that it helps with the emotional impact of the scene or ramping up the tension as you're trying to get, you know, the nuclear codes and that kind of thing. And so is that a conversation that you also have with, like, the music director and the audio director to decide where the music is going to be and where it isn't going to be?
That's correct. That's what we do in the spotting session. And this is kind of a different approach. Like, some companies, you know, whether developer companies or whatever, they just want, hey, write action music that's kind of like this, do this. You know, here's a couple of reference pieces, just write the music. And the composer will just write it blind. And then the implementers and the people on the development side and the audio team, they will then cut it up and put it in the game. But the way I do it is differently. I write it like it's a film score. I write every single cue custom for that moment in the game. And so if a really important story moment is happening, and I want to recall a previous theme that has been written or set up for this entire score, I can do that, you know. And I can then write that theme into a new way of doing it, instead of just using the theme that we had before and putting it in. I can actually customize that theme for the level, for using instruments I want to use for that level.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. My son is a level designer. And one of the things that I learned afterwards, after the game came out, was that things aren't always released in sequence for people to work on. And in that way, it's kind of like shooting a film, where you don't know, you know, the scenes aren't in order. So is that something that you just have to kind of figure out? I mean, you obviously know what the whole story is going to be, but maybe you're writing for a level.
Not always. Yeah, I mean, the first level I got, I think, was the third level in the game. And it was called, I guess the code name for it then was Stakeout. I'm not sure what it's called in the actual released game, because they changed a lot of the names for the release game. But that's when you're in Amsterdam and Turkey, and you're doing all this sort of stealthy stuff. You know, you're following somebody, you're trying to get some intel. So that was a really fun way to start composing, because I didn't have to be bombastic. I could be subtle and interesting and, you know, ambient and textural. And that's really a fun place for me to start, because at the end of the day, you want Black Ops, you want Call of Duty to feel cool. You want to feel cool when you're playing it. You want it to feel like a certain way. So I love doing textural writing like that first, because then it gives me a sense of I've accomplished something early on that I'm really proud of, that I like, you know, yeah. I think it's going to enhance the gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, and then, so what do you think about when you have to ramp the music up for like the boss battles?
You know, it's funny. People ask me, how do I write music and how do I decide what to write? And for me, it's just about the visual inspiration I'm getting from what is in the video that was made for this level. And there's a lot there, you know. I mean, I'm just looking at it, and I'm, you know, especially if I've written music up to that point linearly through, I'm like, okay, now I know what I'm going to do with some of the things that I wrote earlier. I'm going to take that and just make it a bigger, more bombastic piece, action piece, if you will. And, you know, sometimes I like to go counter to the action and be less, you know, bombastic, because, you know, that's what's expected. Yeah. So sometimes you kind of try to do the opposite of that sometimes, just to sort of, you know, shake things up a bit and make it interesting. But it was a really cool piece that I was really proud of in the prisoner level. I don't know how to pronounce this, but it's Ruang Lua Ba, which is Rice Fields 3 in Vietnamese. So Rice Paddy 3, because we did, there was three times you go through this same sequence, and it gets more crazy every time, you know, more drug induced every time. So I just wrote this really interesting, fun, textural piece of battle music that doesn't sound like battle music. It sounds, it kind of does, but it's very cinematic, and I was really proud of that one.
And it must have been fun to write all the music for the cutscenes too. I mean, because those are like little movies of their own.
Oh, right? Yeah. I love doing that. I love writing to picture. So, you know, and I've done plenty of television music, and you talk about having to write music really fast in a short period of time. That's television. So I do have some skills from writing TV music and film music, but. Yeah, I love writing those things, and I write as many as I can. Sometimes they all come in too late, so we ended up editing things in that were already written. But I mean, you know, we have 2.5 hours of music here. And by the time you stem each piece out, you've got all these extra pieces of music you can make that aren't the same thing. They're sort of based on it. So we're very strategic about which ones get edited and which ones get written. So I'll be like, there's, you know, I'll tell them early on, because I know what's coming, and I'll say, I really need these 5, you know, cinematics. They're long, and I want to score them custom, and, you know, let's do everything we can to get those to me before we record next week, so so that I can write them and get them orchestrated and recorded.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you mentioned Jim Lordeman, and you also worked with Jimmy Hinson, Big Giant Circles, on this. And it must have been fun to kind of reconnect with these guys and bounce ideas off of each other for some of the
music. Jim is my assistant. He's been my assistant for 6 going on 7 years now. And, you know, he's just like part of my team. So, you know, he'll take some of my load off. I like to give him some things to write that will make him happy to be my assistant, you know? And when he first came to me, he has a master's degree in composition, and he's obviously a talented guy, but, over the years, I've taught him everything I know about telling the story musically, and he has come a long way, and he's a really fine writer in his own right now. So I enjoy having, you know, a few cues from him along the way, because I just like that. I love collaborating, you know. And usually when he writes a cue, I don't do much on it other than guide him through it. I'll be like, nah, you got to do it this way. You know, it's sort of like I'm the creative director on his cues, but he's pretty self-sufficient. He does a really good job. There's a couple, one or two that I wrote with him, because it was just like, oh, I want to add this, and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, mostly it's collaborative. Jimmy, geez, I've been collaborating with Jimmy since like God knows when, since the first Mass Effect, or was it the second Mass Effect? I lose track. But he's such a talent and such a good guy. And when it comes to, you know, the multiplayer theme, this is the third time we've collaborated on Call of Duty's multiplayer themes. We did Adrenaline together, Inferno, and now this one, so called Rising Tide. So yeah, I was really happy and so fun to write with him all the time. We'll be right back.
can't imagine how you and the rest of your game composer colleagues can't not talk about what you're working on. So it just must be nice to have a group of people that you can talk to about until, you know, word gets out and everything can be public.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of the collaboration and sort of, you know, we're all comrades in arms, so to speak, on this particular one.
Well, you mentioned this is your fifth Black Ops game, and besides besides being asked to do it, what keeps pulling you back in? I mean, what do you really enjoy about working on this particular subset of Call of Duty?
You know, we try. Treyarch is really, you know, they're a company that tries to make the story come alive in single player. I obviously haven't worked with the other companies that make Call of Duty, but to them it's really important to tell a story, and that's my favorite thing in the world to do, is to tell a story. So I suppose if it was just a banging up shooter that, you know, hey, just write a bunch of action music, it would be less interesting to me. And I just like our process. We've done this now, you know, I've written probably, you know, 12, 14 hours of music with them. So we have a process. We have a sort of code, you know, if when we speak to each other, that we just sort of understand it. And, you know, I got to tell you, man, the people at Treyarch are just great people. They're just great human beings. They're just passionate about what they do. They love what they do. All they want to do is have more time to make everything even better, you know? And they treat me really well. They just give me so much freedom. They don't beat me up, you know? They don't beat me up at all. They just take care of me. I take care of them as much as possible. We take care of each other, and it's just a great collaboration.
Wow. It sounds like it was just such a fun project to work on. And that joy, yeah, really, it really comes through in the music. It's a fun soundtrack to listen to on its own, and then it's even better in the game.
Yay. Love hearing that.
Well, Jack, it has been so much fun to talk with you about this, and I really appreciate your time. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate you too. Thanks for doing what you do. Appreciate it.